When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming, episode 175. And they said it could not be done. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I'm delighted to be once again heading down to New Zealand to dairy country, Waikato, to talk to dairy farmer Bart van den Ven. Bart, how are you?
Good, mate. Good. Well, thanks for inviting me over for a chat, and also hello to all the rock and roll farmers out there.
You've very, very recently moved farms, and we'll talk about that more in detail later. But have you and the family settled in okay to the new place?
Yeah, we have. You know, it's quite common here to move farm to farm, and it's always it's a big ordeal. So We were lucky that my mum and dad travelled over from the South Island over here and gave us a hand. So it was fairly smooth, yeah. After you've done it for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times, you sort of seem to, it sort of seems to go a little quicker because you sort of know what you have to do and what not to do.
Sure. And what everyone who follows you on social media will want to know is, did the Wendy house get there okay?
Yeah. Mate, I was so bloody scared it was going to hit a power pole or a phone line or something like that. But
Yeah,
it arrived. The old man, my father, actually drove the tractor, and I was fairly close behind him, shit in my pants, of course, hoping that it was all going to go all right. But yeah, no, I went absolutely smooth, no problems.
Good. Okay. Right, we have an advert to read out for Lima Grain. Are you looking for a winter wheat with an excellent agronomic package, outstanding grain quality, and end market potential? Then set your sights on LG Astronomer from Lima Grain UK. LG Astronomer scores 7.4 for Septoria, 9 for yellow and brown rust, and is stiff-strawed and has OWBM resistance. With a solid yield and specific weight of 77.8, LG Astronomer ticks all boxes for on-farm security and performance. It's a Group 3 wheat that's approved for distilling and biscuit making. LG Astronomer Winter Wheat, the agronomics and quality you've been looking for. But you are a first-generation Kiwi. How did that happen?
I actually rang the old man. You sent me the email, and I thought, I better bloody ask him. But I think it sort of came down to, my uncle and auntie immigrated to New Zealand in 1994.
Okay.
And we come over for a holiday, and I think they came over in 92 and we came over for a holiday. No, they immigrated in 94. We came over here for a holiday in 96.
Okay.
And mum and dad both looked at each other and said, wow, this is a pretty amazing place. We went back. Both my mum and dad worked for Xerox. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a printing company.
Yeah.
And dad been working there for almost 25 years, and he's originally from a farm. We came here for a holiday and we figured out that everything is sort of outside farming instead of inside farming. And my dad had bad asthma when he grew up as a kid, so he never took over the family farm.
Okay.
And so mum and dad went back after their holiday and tried to look for a job. And 2 years later, in 98, we were here. It was But I think ultimately part of the reason also, not only because it's such a beautiful place and quite an easygoing place, is that us kids were quite behind in school.
Okay.
And even though we tried our hardest, it just didn't seem to sort of work out. And when I came here, I was 12.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 15, I was learning things here in New Zealand, what I was already learning when I was 12 in Holland.
Okay.
And it was more in the schooling system here as well. Is in Holland, on Mondays and Thursdays, I had 7 hours of school and the rest was 6 hours. Over here, you have 5 periods or 5 hours, and that's it. Like, okay, you're on the bus going home again. So it's more of a play and study, or sure, play and school at the same time, whereas in Holland, it's quite stressful, really big school, 2,500 kids,
yeah,
whereas here in Morrinsville College, 700 kids. So you sort of, you knew everyone, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, the decision for mum and dad was mostly based on us kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you were 12 when you arrived. So I guess not. I suppose when people move countries and they're really young, kids, it's probably fairly straightforward for them. But when you're 12, I guess, I mean, did you speak any English when you arrived? Or
we actually had English lessons about 6 weeks before we came to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I did learn some of it in Holland, but it was English. It wasn't New Zealand English, right? So that was when I came here. It was just, but the schooling system here, I gotta say that I literally started, my youngest daughter is 5 now, and I read those books when I came in New Zealand. I basically started as a primary kid, and I you sort of get half bullied because you didn't know how to learn the language. So my first priority as a 12-year-old was to have no accent whatsoever the quickest I could. So I wasn't sort of labelled as that foreign kid. So I got that down in about a year, and it only sort of took us, well, me especially, only a year to get everything sort of got going and sort of became a Kiwi really, really quickly. But my brother, for instance, he came here when he was, I want to say, 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And so he was the other way around. He sort of, when he was, I think it was 18, he actually left to go to Holland because he didn't really know what that was.
Mm.
He was quite young and he couldn't remember it now.
Yeah,
back then. So he's actually still there. He's got a beautiful fiance and bought a house, built a house, and he's basically a Dutchie again. So me as a 12-year-old, I sort of became a Kiwi as quickly as I could.
Yeah.
But my brother was almost the other way around. It's quite interesting. He was 8, I was 12, so it was sort of that,
I
don't know.
I was going to say, it's not easy for someone from Holland to speak English without a broad Dutch accent, is there? Because I was watching the football European Championships is on last night. I watched Holland play against Ukraine, and they were interviewing some sort of former Dutch players before the game, and they do speak with that with that amazing accent, don't they?
I think it's worse the other way around, because my wife really wants to sort of speak a few words of Dutch and has tried for years, but man, it's a hard language to learn, apparently. So yeah, I think it's worse the other way around.
Yeah. Do you ever get back over there for a visit? I know you can't at the moment, but have you been?
Last time I was there, I was 20 and I'm 35 now. And we were going to go not the May just been, but the May before that, because my brother was getting married, but then COVID hit and then COVID again. So now he's getting married in September. So we're not going to be there, but. Yeah, it is what it is, you know.
It is tough. So when your parents kind of moved over and they settled in, was it always the intention then that your dad would go into farming somehow? Was that always the plan?
No, it was originally planned that dad was going to work on a farm for a year and then pick up where he left off in Holland, secure a job at Xerox in Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
But he started his job at Mike and Liz Admiral's place and absolutely loved it. The whole outdoor, cows always on grass, all that sort of stuff. No problems with asthma. So he was like, well, this is it. This is it for me. So, that didn't take long, I think.
Yeah. And you growing up, I guess, in a farming area, and I guess you would have been with other farming kids in school. Did you sort of develop that love for farming early on, or did that come later?
Well, not really, because all the farm, like I do remember going to, I had one of my best mates over there, Thorn Arts. They had a dairy farm. They were quite big, actually. They were expanding to about 200 cows. But we never really went and had a look at the cows and milked and all that sort of stuff. So you had the country life, but never sort of getting in a tractor and doing some work. So I was definitely never really a farmer. I wanted to be a baker or a truck driver or something like that. But never a farming. Well, I was scared of animals, scared of dogs until I came here. So, it was never my intention to go farming. So, And then I had quite a few mates that were pig farmers, but they were all indoors and we were sort of never allowed in the piggery. So it was more of a country life than anything, really. And I was in a little village called Westerbeek, which had like 600 people. So it felt country. It almost felt country anyway. You could go out at 8 o'clock at night, and there was no. It was great as a kid.
So when did you first start getting involved with farming in New Zealand?
On my dad's first job at Mike and Liz's. They were 50-50 share milkers, and 50-50 share milking about 300 cows, and dad slotted in there quite nicely. And you know, the odd times they needed the shed cleaned, or they had herd testing, where they see how much the cows are producing. So, and I started helping, and I absolutely fell in love with it. It was the outdoors, and I really quickly got used to animals and started to absolutely enjoy or loved cows all of a sudden. And it was instant for some reason. So, and just did the odd bits. I remember my Mike teaching me how to drive a tractor to do the urea, and I was like, this is it, man. Like, I'm looking at something in this, I don't know what it was. It would have been like a 70 horsepower Massey, with a cab, and it had a radio. I was like, fuck, I've got to keep going. This is awesome. So, that's sort of where the love started. But definitely animals. Like, I'm not like, you might see it on social media that it's all about John Deere's, but I'm way more of a cow man than I am a tractor. I hate driving tractors. I love the look. I love the technology. I can't sit on a tractor for longer than an hour without being absolutely bored shit. So
I know what you mean. When I was sort of teenager, 20s, early 20s, I used to love being on a big tractor, but now, Christ, it's boring.
But I mean, like standing next to a tractor, yakking and giving each other assholes about tractors. I mean, those are the best days to me. Yeah, that's fun, but sitting on the tractor the whole day. My wife loves sitting on the tractor the whole day. She's really into it.
Yeah, okay. So how did you get your first proper job in farming then? How did you go from helping your dad out to your own way?
Well, I didn't enjoy school. It's not like I really got into trouble. I was a bad listener. It went in one ear and it came out the other. I thought it was really boring.
Me too.
But and I wasn't really that good at it, but so I sort of just started relief milking for everyone. And relief milking meaning I just went to someone's place and I either milked with them or milked by myself and just got some cash. And I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of money to be made. Uh-huh. And then I went on to a school trip one day and they didn't have enough cars. So I said, I'll drive. And it was basically me and my best mates. And because everyone was drinking piss apart from me because I was driving. But we got in big trouble. I got suspended from school. And the careers advisor pulled me in one day and she said, honestly, mate, I think you're wasting away here. You should be doing something else. And I was 17, so I was allowed to leave school because you're allowed to leave school when you're 16 here in New Zealand. So she goes, well, why don't you do a certificate in agriculture? Because that's what you seem to be doing all the time.
Yeah.
And so I did. My old man got me into it. Did that for half a year. Then did a diploma in agriculture at Massey University. And again, hated studying, just couldn't do it. Drank way too much piss and looked at way too many girls. And then, and so I finished that off because I was actually really wanted to be a farm consultant or something like that.
Okay.
And, but the study and the money, you know, the cost of studying here is, well, back when I was 18 was just way too much. So I said, stuff it. I'm just going to go and work. So the second job mum and dad got was a low order share milking job for Ron and Christine Bell. And I did a lot of relief milking for them and stuff. So after uni, I went and worked for him for a year and a half. And that started it off, really. I was just a hairy, of course, but just basically walked behind him and did everything that he said and learnt off him. And yeah, and from there, I did that for a year and a half. And then I went on to a herd manager's job. So where I was at Ron and Christine Bell's is a system one.
Yeah.
So here in New Zealand, you've got five systems. So you got system one, meaning all grass, no board and feed. Everything has to be done on the hectares of land that you've got.
Okay.
And in system five, you're talking about feed pads, barns, up to 25% of the feed gets bought in, you know. So
yeah,
I went from a system one to a system five at Victor and Angelique Kuda. I worked there for 2 years as a herd manager and, again, just learned heaps of things like, you know, different systems.
Yeah.
So I did that, found out that I didn't really like the System 5 thing. I much rather the System 1. I had my 21st birthday party, which is kind of a big deal here in New Zealand. I don't know about you over there.
It is. Yeah.
With your yardie and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which, I'm not a drinker, but anyway, I did it. But I had a Dutch friend who actually worked for Victor and Kuda before me. So I basically replaced him. And he pulled me over that night and he said, mate, I hear you've got a little bit of money, but you're not ready to buy your own cows. And I've got the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we pull our money together and make a business out of it? And I thought that was a great idea. And I heard nothing but good things about that guy. And he must have thought the same thing, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's where the game of farming started, like the real responsibilities and all that sort of stuff. It was a real crazy ride. The next 10 years were.
Twenty-one's pretty young to do that.
Yeah, it was really young. It was too young, Will. It was definitely too young. Way too young for me to go 50-50 share milking, and that was clearly visible in my first year of 50-50 share milking, because as a hairy or a herd manager or whatever, you're not self-employed, right? So you get up in the morning, you milk those cows, you're devoted to those cows, but you get weekends off, you go home, you sort of don't have to, well, you do, but you sort of don't have to worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go 50-50 share milking where you buy your own cows, you're self-employed, you've got to do the bills, your GST, you're this, you're that, and it just, that was some rough time. Those first 2 years were definitely rough.
What was it? As early as straight away you started feeling the pressure like that?
Definitely the first year. I also broke up with my partner then, and that was quite sort of tough to deal with.
Yeah.
And just having to do it all yourself.
Yeah.
Like as a herd manager, when I worked for Victor and Angelique, I thought I knew it all. And that's good. I mean, you've got to be confident. But little did I know that, what else came with self-employment was just paying those bills, doing budgets, doing all those sorts of things. And I literally didn't know. And for fuck's sake, the global crisis was at the same time. So we went for a fucking $7.90 payout to $4.55. Are you fucking kidding me? So I basically went bankrupt that first year. But it was so lucky that, again, I had my business partner, Huida and Elisa Van Kessel. They had another job and they sort of supported me well, they supported me and I supported them, of course. But yeah, that if I was by myself, that would have never worked out. I would have been bankrupt straight away. And the banks were handing out money like they were criminals, really. Mm. They were just handing it over back then. Yeah. So, yeah, so, but then, you know, like my business partner couldn't move ahead on the job that he was, where he was, and he said, I'm going to look elsewhere. And he ended up, I ended up moving him to Southland, which is all the way down to the bottom of the South Island. Yeah. And where apparently all the money was made, bigger jobs, more production per cow and all that sort of stuff. So he went and did 500 cows there, and he basically rung me in my second year of that 50-50 job where I was quite stressed. And he said, mate, you've got to come down here. If not, we sort of, you know, we might as well sort of go a different ways, I guess.
Yeah.
So he got me the job next door for the same owner.
Okay.
And that was about the time when me and Vanessa met as well. So
how did you meet?
Yeah. Oh, well, is it a funny story? It probably isn't. But my sister, my youngest sister and Vanessa were mates when they were intermediate, so when they were really young.
Okay.
And I didn't think anything of it, of course. But little did I know that in the stressful moments that I did have in my second season for a cuppa, and thinking nothing of it, of course. And she turned up. I was like, holy, what a stunner. So,
yeah.
I think we smoked about two packets of ciggies and talked for absolutely hours, and we've been inseparable ever since, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, she was always also a dairy farmer. So we knew exactly what we were talking about. And maybe the stress went away as well, because I had that extra person. I didn't feel alone all the time. And that was part of the healing process, I guess.
How, I think sometimes if you've never been to New Zealand, you don't massively appreciate the difference between the North and the South Island. But if you were living in the middle of the North Island to move all the way to the bottom of to Southland, that's a big old move, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fucking cold down south.
Yeah, it is. It's Arctic, isn't it?
It's bloody tropical over where I am now. But,
yeah.
Compared to what Southland is. But definitely what a, yeah. Farming wise, way more production per cow.
Yeah.
Off the bat without doing any more work. Other than that, it's fairly straight. Well, and no droughts, really. So over here in the North Island, well, where I am anyway, in the Waikato, you get more droughts than you don't. So whereas over there, you get a lot more summer rain. So, that's probably the difference. But the cold, the bitter cold, I just couldn't handle. Farming system-wise, I think it's almost basically the same, apart from they went to graze on crops. Whereas we just want to graze on grass, and that's about the only difference, really.
Yeah, okay. So you moved down there, Vanessa came with you. Did you settle in pretty well? Apart from the crappy cold weather, did you settle in well down there?
It was fairly, really. Yeah, farming-wise, it was like a breath of fresh air, really, having no droughts. But, you know, we've got snow, but the staffing issue, that's where the sort of this, like, had to have staff, and that took me about 7 years to figure out that 10 years to figure out that staff is probably not the way to go for me anyway.
What not attracting, not being able to find staff, or not being able to find the right staff to work on the farm?
It didn't help. We were in Southland for the first 3 years, and then we moved to South Otago in a little place called Clydevale, which was a neat town. It was a really neat little town with really great people. But we were so isolated over there, and the farm itself, it had a 50-bale rotary with no automation, and we milked 1,300 cows twice a day in there, and it was just – and you couldn't – and Yeah, and you couldn't attract any staff or no good staff anyway. And can you blame them? You know, like it's just hours spent in the shed, so milking cows. But yeah, staff was the main problem for me. And then we did 2 years in Drummond in Southland, then we did another year in Ōrite, which is in Southland as well. And then we actually, so we didn't do like 500 to 700 cows. And then we moved to 1,300 cows and did that for 4 years. And then the last year that we were there, we got another job, 500 cow job. So we're milking 1,800 cows over two farms. And like I say to everyone, we were farming staff instead of cows. Yeah. I really lost that. The love for cows. Like I started farming because I absolutely loved cows. Mm-hmm. And I was sick of farming. Like I was absolutely, like when my business partner, Quito and Elisa, wanted a meeting all of a sudden, they wanted a fucking meeting. I was like, what do you mean a meeting? Like we never have meetings. The only meetings that me and Quito were ever have was after milking or after breakfast when we had a coffee and a cigarette and just to talk about what the day was going to bring. And all of a sudden they wanted a meeting at night. I was like, what the hell's going on, Vanessa? And we both said to her, shit, they want to sell up. They want to fucking sell up. What have we done wrong? You know, like,
yeah.
So, and it happened to be that, but of course there was nothing wrong, but they, I think they clearly seen that I, or me and Vanessa were definitely losing, interest, I think. So, yeah, we ended up selling our cows to them, so selling half the business to them. But, when we made the decision to sell, I was basically ready to get out of farming. I was like, I've had it. It was like, what the fuck's the point of getting up at 3:30 in the morning? Getting home at 6:30 in the afternoon and at night, not seeing like I never saw my kids. So I was like, this is bullshit. And then, you know, Vanessa got me around to just like, all right, just think about it for a couple of months and just calm down. And I did, and was lucky that she came to the rescue again, like she always does.
Yeah.
And got us to just go farming again. But yeah, I was ready to. I really fell out of love of farming, especially in that last year, I think.
Do you think you were just kind of burnt out? You just mentally and physically exhausted?
I was heading that way. I really think now, looking back, that I was definitely heading that way. And you know, at the end of the day, because I was never pissed off our business partners came to sell the business.
Hmm.
I was annoyed at the start, but now I can't thank them enough now.
Because
it definitely saved my career. Yeah. I would have been somewhere way different. Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, I would have burnt out, definitely. Yeah, I would have been out of the industry. And I would have bad-mouthed it too, I'm sure of it. Like quite. That's quite often how it goes, you know, like you have a bad run and then, you know, you're basically scouting off because fuck this dairy industry, is too hard work, you never get anywhere, la-di-da-di-da, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not true at all. And it's really not true because, well, especially in New Zealand, it's such a positive industry to be in.
Yeah, it seems like there's so many opportunities there, I guess.
Yeah.
For hardworking people.
Well, I mean, for people that are not even in the industry, that's the cool thing about, I think that's the cool thing about our industry is that you can start off as just a random worker.
Yeah.
And you could end up one day owning a farm. I know it seems, we're still going through that. we're still trying to buy a farm one day, but I mean, it is possible. I can see it. I can definitely see it. Yeah.
Are there still the opportunities there now that there were 10, 20 years ago?
There are just different a lot of different ways of getting there.
Yeah,
I think there's definitely. Oh, I mean, yeah, hell yeah, you can. It's some people say it's a lot harder to get to farm ownership. I think it's almost getting, easier.
Yeah.
Almost. I don't know. That might, yeah, people might think differently. But, I mean, you got these things called equity partnership. Now, I've heard more horror stories than positive stories about it, but it's a real good way of getting into land ownership and slowly building up equity in land. I mean that no one ever talked about that 20, 30 years ago. There's just different. Because the 50-50 share milking thing is slowly dying. Well, it has over the last 10, 15 years, definitely. I mean, there's less than half of what it was then. So that's definitely, and a return on investment on a 50-50 share milking job, especially, like on cows, it's fairly high. It's near on 30%.
Yeah.
For a, for your average farmer. So that's long gone. So we're having to look at other things, but there's definitely opportunities out there. Sure. But it's the land prices that kill it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, yeah. And the guy, and guys like established farm owners buying up neighbors' blocks, so all of these farms around here, the sort of 100 acre farms that, out of the Second World War, so all these guys sort of got these 100 acre blocks.
Yeah.
And they were milking, and I don't know, like 150, 160 cows, beautiful little farms. But the neighbor bought that farm, then he bought that other farm, then he bought this other farm. Now they're 200 hectares, and there's no way I'm ever going to be able to buy a 200 hectare farm. I think that's ultimately the problem, is that there's, there's no little farms like where we are now, like these sort of 60, 70 hectare farms that, the few and far in between these days.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, that's, very similar story to the UK as well.
You only have to look at the average herd size in New Zealand these days. It's like, I think it's like 360 cows.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't know what it was like 15, 20 years ago, but it was nowhere near that.
Mm.
So, yeah. Nothing's ever easy, right?
No.
And I mean, like, it'll be the same as buying a house in town.
Yeah.
Like, that's not easy either.
No, but, for sure.
And, yeah, so, I mean, yeah.
So when you I had a really rough year in 2019, probably the lowest I've ever been, and somebody due to farming stuff and burnout, similar story as you, really, but somebody said to me, a friend of mine, and I didn't talk to many people about it, but I did talk to a couple of people, and one of my friends said, you won't realize this now, but once you've got to the other side of this, and you'll look back and think that this was a good thing, because it'll give you better perspective on your life moving forward. And I didn't really understand at the time, but now I do. I totally get it. Is that, would you say you were the same?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I've heard that question. So, have you ever been like really stressed or really down? Like, it's, I have been, but I never noticed until I'm out of it. Until I'm out of the other end.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
it's bullshit. Like like a minute, I piss my wife off, I piss my kids off, and they tell me, and then I'm like, oh yeah, shit, I'm going through something here. But in the heat of those things, like big things, like you're in denial, guys often say, oh, do you have any advice? And I don't. I'm really sorry. I really don't, because while I'm in it, I don't realize that I'm really in bad shape. I don't actually know that I'm in bad shape. I think this is fairly normal. I'm going through some tough times, but I got to work through it. I got to harden the fuck up and just keep going, because I got a family to feed. I got bills to pay. So you just keep going.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, quite often you leave things behind, i.e. your wife, she's got needs, kids, you miss that. And then once you're at the other end, when you've done the work to get out of this shithole that you're in, and then all of a sudden you go, holy shit, what have I done? Like, I've done this right, but, I mean, I've pissed a whole lot of people off maybe. But what's happened with me? It's hard, because like I wish I had some real advice, but
Yeah. Have you got better at dealing with it now, do you think? Stress.
The advice that I would give is that if you do know you're in a deep spot and you don't know how to get out of it, I mean, these days there is so much help out there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's probably the only advice, like, just keep talking. Like, but my experience is it's just I'm too dumb to bloody notice.
But you seem and we'll go on to social media in a bit, but you do some brilliant videos on social media, and sometimes it you're very honest on your videos, which I think is why people and funny, but I think sometimes you seem like you're very hard on yourself. Is that something?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes too much, but yeah. Maybe that's served me pretty good so far.
But it does
upset me more, right? Like, so yeah, I get really pissed off at myself. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. That's something that I do have to work on, but yeah. So, but it is what it is. Like, it's funny because, you know, when you're young, you haven't got that life experience. So now when you look back, you go, Jesus Christ, what the fuck were you doing? You're like, what an idiot, mate. Like, you know, like, so it does, yeah, experience does help, you know, like age, wisdom.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, you mentioned that there's opportunities to sort of talk and, you know, talk about these pressures and stresses out there. You know, that's certainly something. I mean, it's changed immeasurably over here in the last 5 years. You know, 10 years ago, no one was talking about how mental health and things like that in the farming industry. But now it's kind of pretty normal to see that being talked about in the farming press or various different organisations. And there's tons of opportunities, as you've said, to talk to people. New Zealand, you know, there's that image of the tough farmer, you know, standing on a hilltop, the Colin Meads kind of image.
Has that
changed though? You know, I mean, I guess it has. You know, that it's okay to talk about these things.
It's certainly advised to talk to everyone, talk to people when you're down. 100%. That's definitely changed, and men are definitely opening up. But I mean, the statistics certainly aren't lying. I mean, it's not really showing that it's helping. I think the main problem is that you got to. It's a proactive thing, right? So you got to. But what we need to learn is that before we get into that deep hole, we should be able to recognize when we're going into that deep hole, because once you're in it. That's when the problems arrive. That's when people are not talking. And sometimes it can be really embarrassing, right? Like these embarrassing things that you go, God, I made such a bad mistake there. I mean, I can't talk about that.
It's absolute
bullshit. I'm not going to do that. It was a big thing. Maybe this is going into a little bit too early. A couple of years ago, I did a video. On social media, on Twitter, that was probably one of them things where I actually opened up there. I was like, should I do this? Should I not? I had this great plan. We're trying to get rid of these bobby calves here in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So I thought, all right, we'll do these short gestation Herefords. So we did that. And I hate not feeding my cows, right? So, but they need, you know, just before they calve, or two, three weeks before calve, they sort of need to be slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
They put a lot of weight on these calves. But, you know, my fault, didn't read the fucking instructions. Next thing, I got cows calving. I was ruining cows. Like, they had bad calvings. Standing there in a paddock, absolutely bawling my eyes out, going, well, now I fucked up, because this is completely my, it's like, honest, it's my fault. And only my fault. But so I was in this deep, deep hole. I was like, so what am I going to do now? Well, now I've got to figure out, like, okay, this has happened. It's my fault. I fucked up here. Okay, that's in the past now. I know these vegans would go mental at me. But like you do have to move on. Yeah. So it took me a couple of days to move on. And that last cow, me and the boss are standing there and he could see it. He could see it. I was in a real bad way. And he goes, mate, and this is a real manly man. And even he said, mate, you tried your best.
Yeah.
Deadstock, livestock, whatever. Just keep going, man. Like you've got other things. Like you've got 500 other cows there. And I was like, yep, yep. So I did a video. And I honestly just said, what the fuck did I, you know, because I didn't know what really what I did wrong there. And I just said, well, how can I fix this? And what have I done wrong here? Because I don't seem to understand it. Because I had AB calves, which were Friesian, that were popping them out like it was no tomorrow. Like they were little Jersey. I had no calving crop whatsoever. These Herefords came along and boof, I had massive problems. So all of a sudden, and then boom, this epiphany. Like this, all of these people just outreach, like, oh, maybe you should do this. Is why I like Twitter and nothing else, because everything else you just get attacked. But on Twitter, it's so positive. They just came up with ideas. And within a day, I was like, oh, I know exactly what I did wrong. Boom. And it's never going to happen again. Mm-hmm. So this is never going to happen again. So I've learned my lesson. Yeah. So, hey, there you go. Maybe I was really down. Yeah. Now that I'm talking about it with you, but I think, talking to others about it, learning from your mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite often it seems so far away from where you're sitting, and there's this random dude on Twitter just goes, oh, it's definitely that. Like, this is it. I've had this before, la-di-da-di-da-di-da. And you go, oh, problem fixed. Holy shit. Little did I know that it only took one bloody video to just, and it's hard, you know, because with like, well, my Twitter feed is 95% positive and 5% negative. So how cool is it that I can post something or ask a question and get an instant response, a positive response by this massive diverse group of farmers?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you got beef farmers, you got crop farmers, you got dairy farmers, and then you got them all over the world as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, like it's just been such an awesome platform to be on.
How did you get started with it, social media and Twitter?
Yeah. Donald Trump. That's how I got started. I thought Donald Trump is the best troll and still is in the world. I was like, I've got to see this. I mean, I love talking, giving people shit, and I love receiving it too. So I was like, this guy's giving everyone shit. Let's bring it on. Let's have a laugh. And then so I went on there, and I knew a couple of people all of a sudden that were on there.
Yeah.
So I followed them, and I followed them, and then I started posting pictures. But really what sort of started it all the New Zealand farming page. Okay. I took that over for a week.
Yeah.
And I thought the farmers before me just posted pictures and just wrote things. I was like, oh, maybe I'll do something different. Maybe I'll just do videos, because I'd never done a video in my life. I was like, too scared, too embarrassed to do that. But I was like, stuff your butt. Just do something different. So I did that, and it seemed to have gotten a bit of a response. So I was like, after this week, I might just keep going. And then I just like, I'm just myself, man. It's off the cuff. I don't give a shit. Like, whatever. Say, like, if you like me, you like me. If you don't, this is the cool thing about Twitter. Just fucking unfollow me and just keep going. It's good. I love it. I actually love that platform.
I mean, I suppose that's what comes through with your videos. And, you know, I've had so many people on Twitter, have you seen this guy? You've got to follow Bart. He'll make you laugh. But I think it's you're right. It's your honesty, isn't it? I mean, because you share on your videos the highs and the lows of farming, you're right. Sometimes it is difficult to talk about those lows and mistakes you've made, isn't it? And I've done it. You know, I've made more mistakes than I can count on the farm, and I have 100%. Talked about it, but it's quite hard because you don't really want people saying, Chris, what are you doing, you dickhead? But you know, I massively respect your honesty with what you're doing. I think it's really important.
Yeah, thanks. Well, yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's been good following you too. It's, and following you, it's gotten me onto this podcast that you're hosting, and it's really good actually. You learn a lot of things from guys overseas that you, and because I'm from Holland, like Europe, like you sort of you get to see the weather, you know, even the weather, like I remember those. The spring, you almost start smelling the spring again in Holland, like sort of sort of brings back memories almost.
And people always, as I mentioned, people love your humor on that. You are very, very funny. My favorite.
Yeah, am I though? Like I still don't think I am funny at all.
Oh, you are. And I mean, my favorite is when you had your the milking apron on. And then you turn around, your bare ass to the camera, and people love that, don't they? It's just so funny.
Yeah, I suppose. I'd like to think it was because I've got a sexy ass, but I'm guessing it's probably something else. But it was just fitting because if you knew what we were going through, we had such a bad drought that year. It was just ridiculous. Mm. All our profit went on to feed. So when we got that bit of rain, I mean, I think everyone was wanting to do, I think everyone was doing the same thing I was doing. It's just, except I was putting it on video and they weren't. Put it that way. I think everyone was that happy anyway. So,
yeah. But, you know, as we've talked about, farming can be tough. So, you know, humour, it's important, isn't it? Just making people smile, definitely. Making people laugh. It's a really big deal, I think.
And that's just I didn't expect that. I'm not looking for followers at all. I'm just having a laugh, man. Like, just having a laugh.
Yeah. Tell us about on that top 50% dairy farmer. where did that come from?
I don't have a clue. Put it this way. Like, I am not the best farmer there is at all. I can clearly see that by going to discussion groups, looking on Twitter. Like, I mean, there's some amazing farmers out there. Mm-hmm. But I'm certainly not the worst.
Yeah.
So one day I was like, I've got to be fifth. I've got to be in the middle there somewhere. and then I thought, well, I've got to be in the top 50. Like, the top 50. I was like, fuck, that's a decent hashtag.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because, I mean, you know, so you got this, I mean, half the farmers are in the top 50% and the other half are in the bottom. So I'm either there or like, so you can sort of, I mean, so you can basically talk to everyone because everyone's in that demographic anyway. So.
For sure.
It's just thought it was a funny thing, but it's the same as the hashtag dishes. I don't know where that came from. Honestly, I don't. If someone can tell me where that came from, please do. I didn't try and steal it or anything. I don't think I did. I can't remember. I don't know.
Yeah,
It doesn't help that me and my wife have got a very healthy vicious relationship.
And also
my wife's on Twitter now as well, and she doesn't give a shit. She's just as dirty as me anyway. So.
You seem to the two of you seem to laugh a lot. You seem to have good fun with each other.
Yeah. I mean, she's my best mate. So
Team dishes. I would say to anyone listening who is on Twitter who doesn't follow you, to follow you and search for your name plus dishes
But that dishes thing is if I do the dishes I get sex, you know, like that's really what it is. But at the same time you're helping your wife, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like you're doing it together. I mean, she helps me on the farm, so I can only do a little bit around the house too, right? So, and I haven't cooked a meal in 15 fucking years, so I might as well do the dishes. Like, I can't cook a meal to save my life, so I might as well do something else. So I vacuum, I do a bit of vacuum. I did a vacuum tonight. And God damn it, I did the dishes too, so it's happening.
I better not keep you too long,
like, so it's just like this. I don't know. Like I just, you know what it is? I think everyone's going through the same shit as me.
Yeah.
So I'm just being myself. So yeah.
For sure. I got to ask you about your haircut, your mullet. Yes, that's famous as well on Twitter.
Is it? Yeah. I haven't had a haircut for a long, long time, so it looks absolutely horrible. But I think we've got the field days here in New Zealand starting Wednesday, going to Saturday. So I'm going to have to get a haircut before that, I'm guessing. But I don't know if the mullet's going to stay, to be honest.
You've got to keep it.
Yeah, well, okay. Just because you said it, Will, I'll do it.
You've got to keep the stripes in the side as well.
Yeah. Oh, the stripes are staying no matter what.
Okay, good. So where we mentioned at the beginning you've moved farms. Where are you now, and how's it all working now for you?
So we are in Springdale, which is this tiny little village in between Morrinsville and Te Aroha in the Waikato, New Zealand. So sort of grew up around here. So we never said we were going to come back, but when we made the decision to sell our business to the business partners, we said we want to come back to here where we grew up, because Vanessa grew up just around the corner from here on a farm. So yeah, we're always going to come back here, but and just going smaller. So we went from 1,800 cows, sold the business, went to 500 cows in Pairoa, which is further up from here, and again had staff. Ultimately, I think I'm not a bad boss, but I'm certainly not. Yeah, I'm not a. I've come to a realization that I'm not a great boss, and meaning boss, not meaning like, oh, he's a prick to work for, but I feel like I'm not teaching these young fellas or girls enough. I think I'm not doing a good enough job on that, and so. So we just made sort of the decision to, like, if we want to stay in this industry, which we absolutely love, for the next 20 to 30 years, it's probably going to be without staff. So we just said to ourselves, okay, we're going to go to a farm where we don't have to have any staff. So this came up, and very lucky that we got it. Bought the cows on this farm again. Mm-hmm. We're 50-50, and we're only milking 220. So, yeah, this is it.
So you're happy?
Very happy. Like, probably the happiest I've been in forever, probably. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
At the moment.
Yeah. So I think you mentioned it earlier that the opportunities in New Zealand, you can end up owning a farm. Is that the dream? Is that where you?
Yeah.
That's where you want to
go. Well, me and Vanessa have given ourselves till the age of 45 to be able to buy land. If we cannot do it, we've given ourselves to the age of 45 and given ourselves to the age of 40 to have a clear path to farm ownership. But 45 is the cut-off point. If we cannot buy a dairy farm by then, we're going to buy a big-ass runoff and, you know,
yeah,
become hippies, grow lots of weed, and live the high life. just be graziers or something like that, you know, like become a sleeping beef farmer. Or, I don't know. We'll see. But we're giving ourselves to the age of 45, because my father sold his herd because of that reason. He didn't see. He was 45. He couldn't see. He could see. He could see him owning a farm, me and his mum and dad, but it would have to be him in the shed till he was 65. And he said, "I am not doing this."
Yeah,
like, so he made the right decision, I think, in the end, just to exit the dairy, well, sell his cows and exit the industry. Still part of the industry, but So we've given ourselves doing sort of the same kind of thing.
We've got to see,
and that needs to happen quick. I'm 35 now, so I've got 5 years to sort of, you know, find something where I can see that by the age of 45, I can own a piece of dirt, ourselves, right? Yeah. Just me and Vanessa. Yeah. So that's sort of the plan. But amazing. If that's going to happen, I don't know. We're going to try our best.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got two kids, right?
Yeah, two kids. Britta is 9 and Taylor is 7.
Similar age to my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. You got all girls, don't you?
Yeah, 4 girls.
Like,
yeah.
All 4 girls.
Yeah, I know. Yikes. I know.
I've got 2. Shit. And I'm freaking out already.
Yeah, there definitely won't be any more though. I'm a,
yeah. Oh, okay, all right.
I'm a teaser ram these days. I'm sure you've got work to do. So we will wrap this up in the traditional way with the hard hitting quick questions. I know you're a music fan.
Mate, yeah.
Because I follow you obviously on Twitter and I've seen you and Vanessa love a bit of live music. What's your all time favorite song?
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's the hardest question.
I know. It changes every day.
Song is a weird one. But yeah. I mean, for instance, at the moment, I'm really enjoying Soldier by Fit Freeze Drop, which is a New Zealand band. But I listen to a lot of retro wave, drum and bass, reggae, and a lot of 80s music. Like George Michael's my man. You know, like he's like the dishes come on and I play a bit of George Michael, you know, in the mood. So, but, and it just, you know, like, and because my wife's a heavy metal freak. So we sort of, it's sort of, I like drum and bass, and she like, yeah, it works well. But my favorite song, that's a real hard one.
Tough.
Yeah.
What's your, I think this is a really good, someone asked me this question not long ago, and I think it's a really interesting question. What is your current phone home screen picture? Is it of the family or is it of cows?
It's of my wife and in a uncompromising position on my bed somewhere. When that email came through and I read that, Vanessa cracked up laughing, of course. Just like, so do I got to be honest here? I thought I'll just be honest.
I feel really boring now. I've just got a picture of my kid. Okay, you are like me, a massive space nerd. What's your favorite sci-fi movie?
What's your favorite space movie, Will?
Do you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan, so, and my kids are too, especially my oldest daughter loves Star Wars. She's a huge Star Wars nerd. And we watch Rogue One quite a lot together. So I think
Rogue One is definitely the best Star Wars movie ever made, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, 100%. Such a good movie.
Yeah.
And it's in that era of the first 3 films, you know? It sits in there quite well. And they did that really well. It looked sort of retro too, the clothes they were wearing. It was brought back all the memories of the first 3 movies. It used to, of course, be Star Wars, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be, for me, it's got to be 2001 Space Odyssey, 100%. Yeah, okay. That movie just, I keep watching it. It's just too good. When I was younger, it was definitely Star Wars. But in the last sort of 15 years, I've started listening to a lot of podcasts. Like I don't know if you listen to Lex Friedman or Joe Rogan and all them. They have all these scientists on, and you can clearly see that Star Wars is, you know, it's very unrealistic. Whereas Space Odyssey, I mean, that could have happened quite easily. So I'll never forget when I seen that spaceship that goes around that artificial gravity where they're walking. I mean, far out. This is so cool.
Yeah.
I just keep watching that scene over and over again. Yeah, it's such a cool movie.
With the music and the soundtrack as well.
Yes. Awesome, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Really good movie. Yeah.
Okay. What would you like? I'm slightly nervous at asking this question, but what would you like to be the best in the world at doing? Like, what would some sort of Bart is the best in the world at this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should be scared. I don't know if I'm going to answer this. Like avoid. Yeah, I'll just say farmer.
Okay.
I'm always looking to be better, but if it was off chat, which it is, so I'd definitely be the best guy at sex. When I'm always learning. I'm always learning.
Always learning. I think always learning. Yeah, I think is the title of the podcast now. Always learning.
But definitely, I'm always thriving to be a better farmer. Definitely.
Always learning.
Do I want to be the best? Probably not, because you get all the exposure and all that sort of shit, I guess. But yeah, I love this stuff, man. I live and breathe it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell. Okay. Lastly then, a traditional question to end. What is your favorite agriculture related social media account to follow?
Thought about this the whole bloody day. And I'm on a few platforms. I hate TikTok, even though I'm on it. But I got this one guy. It's not an open account, but he's a good mate. But his name is Snake Skinner, a.k.a. D-Rock. And the guy must be the funniest dude in the whole world. Some people think I'm funny, and then I look at that guy and go, you guys are just stupid. But I also like, YouTube-wise, like I've got my own YouTube channel, which I'm going to start doing again. Mm-hmm. It's just been too busy the last sort of year. But I like Ben Dooley. I don't know if you'd know him as well.
Yeah,
he's got that Deep South Sheep and Beef channel, which is
for sure.
He's quite funny. He's got quite dry humor.
Definitely. Yeah.
But I just can't stop laughing at him sometimes. He's hilarious. And he's, for a young fella, because he's still in his 20s, I think, he's very switched on, so yeah. I quite like him. But my ultimate favorite, and he's quite funny too, but it'd have to be Dairyman New Zealand.
Yeah. Another dry sense really, of humor.
Exactly. But he also writes a really good blog. If you go to his Twitter page, you just, and quite often the other day, actually, we had this thing how they're going to make these live exports that's going to be non-existent here in New Zealand in the next 2 years. And I didn't like it. I was like, you got to look at the free market, la-di-da-di this, and this was only one ship that capsized, even though I sympathize with everyone that was on board, of course, and the stock as well. But I was pretty damn quiet about it. I was like, I'm just going to have to think about this one. And then here comes Dairyman, writes a blog. I read that blog and I go, well, okay. He makes sense. So it just makes sense, that guy. So you think you're good at farming, or you think you're good at, you know, life in itself. And then you've got these guys on Twitter, you just go, oh, well. And the likes of yourself, Dairyman, you know, all them guys that are just, you learn so much of you and you know, and all those other people. So definitely Dairyman.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite people to follow too. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Love following you on social media. You always make me smile. Keep up the good work.
It's been great. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you. Nice to talk to you. And we'll talk on Twitter again, I'm sure.
For sure. Well, if coronavirus ever does go away, we did promise ourselves, when my wife and I, when we came to New Zealand, we did promise ourselves that if we ever had kids, we'd take them back one day for a visit. So if we do, we'll be sure to let you up.
Well, and it goes the same for you, because the amount of guys that bloody private message me on whether it be TikTok or Snapchat, and they're all from Ireland for some fucking reason. Like, they're all, and I say, oh, you've got to come down here. You've got to do this. It's the same. If I look at my dragging it on a bit, but on my YouTube channel, if you look at where, and on Twitter, if you look at where most of my followers or subscriptions come from, it's always England, Wales, and Ireland. And other place? Scotland. Oops. So they're all, you know, like, yeah, they're so all 80%, I'm not kidding, 80% of them on my YouTube all are from there. So quite interesting, actually.
For sure.
So yeah. But I'd love to go there. Love to go there.
Yeah. For sure. Well, yeah, well, you're always welcome anytime. Okay, yeah. But I will let you go because I know you've done the dishes, yeah, so I don't want to keep you any longer.
Thanks, guys. And thanks for this podcast. It's awesome. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. And everyone out there, thanks for listening and hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.